The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Glad you're here. It's 11 minutes after 7. Mr. Outdoors, Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. The Outdoor Report every Friday at about this time. And Greg, when does fall actually begin in reality here in Southern
Oregon? We're in it. We're fully in fall now. There's, you know, obviously we get September 1st and we're in meteorological fall.
Right.
Because back in the 90s, you know, the World Meteorological Organization said, you know, weather doesn't really pay attention to a calendar, and now neither are we, and we're going to institute meteorological seasons that actually make far more sense based on what you will see happening in weather.
Okay, well, in other words, the Meteorological Society is saying we're going to match reality, okay?
Exactly, okay. Because, hey, weather doesn't know what a calendar and what seasons are. It does what it does, but the meteorological seasons make far more sense when you look at it, and the summer for meteorological aligns pretty much with what everybody in reality considers summer to be. It starts on June 1st. It ends on August 31st. Well, what typically is right there just before June 1st? Memorial Day weekend, which most people honestly consider that, hey, that's the start of summer.
That's
when we really start thinking summer. And then August 31st is always going to land just before and during Labor Day weekend, which everybody considers, you know, the end of summer.
Yeah, but all I'm getting at when it comes to fall is, well, what I'm getting at at fall, though, Greg, is that it just hasn't felt like fall. That's all.
That is certainly true. And, you know, I've been posting and talking about, you know, Indian summer. I used to be far more stick to the official viewpoint of what true Indian summer is, and then realized, you know, honestly, especially west of the Cascades here where we live, we really don't reach what triggers true Indian summer like east of the Cascades and certainly back east, because the true definition of it is you have the first frost, you have the trees turning color,
right,
and then you're going to have a run of temps that would, you know, be a pretty good summer day. And in our part of the world out here, Medford, Grants Pass, we still haven't had a widespread frost and probably won't, as the way things look, until probably down well into October. But we've got trees turning color. We're in seasonal fall for sure now, which started Sunday. And so, you know, I finally kind of relaxed on that and go, no, I'm going to modify it a bit for, you know, our part of the world and say, when you got the trees coloring up and you've got temperatures 10, 15 degrees above average, I'll go with Indian summer.
Okay.
And so that's what we're seeing a lot of right now. How long this is going to last? We don't know for sure. The longer range look right now supports that this is probably going to be the rule through at least the middle part of October. The deer hunters absolutely don't want to hear that, because a week from Saturday is the opener for the Oregon deer rifle season.
Oh, they want
Oregon rifle season.
They want it getting rainy and all that kind of stuff, getting the bucks and everything on the move, and that's not going to happen when it's...
Probably going to come later, like it typically does, honestly, for the Western Oregon deer rifle season. But some move, that's already actually happening. And I started hearing from guys who are out in the archery season going, you know, tell you what, I'm seeing a lot of bucks out there. And I really haven't done any kind of real serious scouting anywhere. But I will tell you this, where I have been out driving around and looking at deer, I noticed the exact same thing. Hey, we got a lot of bucks here. Mm-hmm. More than I can remember seeing in quite some time. So there's the big positive element for those getting ready for that deer season opener a week from tomorrow. It looks like we're going to have better opportunities from the sheer numbers.
Could I ask you for a 14-day forecast?
Stand around for you to shoot them?
Oh,
no.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you gotta have to hunt him down. I want to shift
gears. A lot more bucks.
Okay, I want to shift gears on you here for just a moment. Can I abuse you personally? Can I do that?
No, sure.
Okay, all right. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be celebrating. Well, it's the weekend for my 20-year anniversary marriage with Linda. Okay, so we're going to be heading out to the coast. Are we still going to be looking at kind of Indian summer, very comfortable kind of stuff at that point? Because we're going to go out to the coast for a couple of days to celebrate.
Right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, a couple of weeks. Two weeks from now.
I just don't see anything that looks like we're going to be seeing major storms and the start of the rain parade. I don't see anything like that happening in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, good. All right, we're going to enjoy it. Because I know that when you go out to the coast, you just get what you get. You know, you have to be happy one way or the other.
Right, but, you know, at this time of the year, you should also be expecting the fact that in the mornings, mm-hmm. probably going to have at least a low cloud layer. You may also have fog. It's entirely possible there could be some drizzle, but come the afternoons, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff typically breaks up and burns out. And, you know, again, you look at the time of the year, and that's not unusual at all. But I have always said the absolute two best months to head to the southern Oregon coast or anywhere on the Oregon coast, actually, to enjoy some time and have better odds for having sunshine and really pleasant conditions, September and October, without
okay.
any doubt.
All right. Well, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to enjoy a casino breakfast or two along with some other things. So I'm going to kind of keep it at that.
Okay.
You know? All right. And now, as far as back to the I'm sorry I took you off of the hunt. Is there anything really important about the opening of deer season we need to talk about right now to get ready for next weekend or not?
Anything that I can think of significant. You know, another thing that I have been talking about with others is the fact that, you know, thank our lucky stars, we have escaped major fires down here, Jackson and Josephine counties. There's not been a lot of disruption. There's not been a lot of firefighting activity. You can say the same thing about western Douglas County, southern Douglas County, specific to the Till and Milo areas, and then a little east around Drew. Yeah, there's been some firefighting activity, but all of that has really settled down, and there's not nearly as much activity and disruption. So all of it lined out for us to have, you know, pretty minimal fire impact in terms of also closures and things like that. You get further north in the Cascades, you get east of the Cascades, there is still a lot of fire-related disruption. There's still a lot of firefighting activity going on as they're doing mop-up and rehab. There are still a lot of forest closures and land closures happening due to fire activity. So if your plans take you east of the Cascades or you're going up north in the Cascades to go with family and friends, say east of Eugene, Salem, you know, those areas, you really need to be taking a look at the areas you intend to see if they're even open at this time, because chances are they may not be, and also because we're talking rifle season now and not bows, hearing a lot of plans that the current standing closures will probably be extended to include most of, if not all of, the rifle deer season, especially east of the Cascades, because that rifle deer season is less than 2 weeks. So, I don't see the fair closure situation changing at all during the east of the Cascades mule deer hunts. But again, Cascades to the north of, I'm going to say, Highway 38. Mm-hmm. Those closures that are in place right now, some of those may get lifted as we get to the second half of the Western Oregon deer season.
All right. Greg Roberts with me from RogueWeather.com, keeping us up on what's happening with hunting, the outdoors. We wanted to go back on fishing. And last week you ended up talking about just an insane, some guy out from the coast who claims to be an outdoor guy too, you know, and I guess he does some work on radio out there on the coast there too. going after you and going after Diamond Lake, because it had to do, I mean, you came on and you were talking about the necessity to treat, what is it, the tiger trout and the brown trout.
The tigers and the browns.
The tigers and the browns.
Again, let's go back to something. This guy that created all of this mess wasn't even here to see what we all went through with Diamond Lake and the Tui Dub situation.
Yeah, right.
So he's got no knowledge of it. He doesn't care about it. Diamond Lake meant nothing to him, where it means a lot to a lot of people. And what wound up doing last Friday was I said, I posted information that will demonstrate what you're supposed to do, posted on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
Diamond Lake Resort saw it, posted it on their Facebook page. Both of us came under withering attack from this guy's minions.
Really?
They came after us. Guns blazing.
Okay, but how could they be attacked? What are they attacking you for? Because essentially you're talking about, these are the rules and regulations on how you're supposed to catch and release these fish, and you're not supposed to grab them by the gill.
Right down to it, Bill.
What?
They don't want to know. They don't care. They don't give a damn. They have no respect for Diamond Lake and the fish in it, and they want to do whatever they want to do. And God help those who try to point out this is what's supposed to be done. Now, this has a second part to the story.
Okay.
When I'm getting blasted on my own pages, on my own profile, and elsewhere, and Diamond Lake Resort comes under such intense attack that we both pull the information from our pages, we turn back on ODF&W and Oregon State Police, and basically the message from both of us is the same. Why should we try to post the regulations when ODF&W won't do a damn thing about doing what they should be doing that? And then when you bring it up with ODF&W, here's what you get. You point out the example and they go, that's unethical and borderline criminal. Well, what are we going to do about it? Well, that's OSP's responsibility. Then you call OSP and say, what are we going to do about it? OSP says, well, we don't set the regulations. ODF&W does. And since there's really nothing criminal here, while we agree with them that it's unethical and borderline criminal, and we would talk to people who do it, they don't do a damn thing.
Well, the thing is, though, if it's borderline criminal, it means it's borderline criminal, but it's not criminal. It hasn't crossed that line
exactly.
yet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, both organizations say, oh, people shouldn't be doing that. Will either organization do a damn thing to start putting information out and going, here's how we want you to handle the brown trout and the tigers in Diamond or the tigers at Fish Lake?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. So if you're outraged by that, hammer ODF&W, hammer the OSP, hammer the state representatives, hammer the state senators, and demand accountability. Because if they're not going to do that, what are regulations in place for? Period. End of story.
Well, they must not, ODF&W must not consider those rules that you were talking about last week of, catch and release, not all that important if they're not concerned. They must not think it's all that big of a deal.
There you go. So why have the regulations?
Oh, okay.
If you're not going to support them, why even have them?
Yeah, sounds like the minions of this guy out on the coast, though, are kind of moronic, but
well, guess what? In investigating who was attacking me, Trump supporters.
What?
All of them wrapping in the flag. Don's our guy.
Okay, well, what does that have to do with fishing regulations, though?
Doing this.
No, wait a minute. What does that have to do with fishing regulations?
Because what do Trump supporters most commonly like to take pride in? We support law enforcement.
Oh.
We support the rules. They moan and groan about how society's coming apart.
Yeah. We like rules. We like rules until they're telling us not to manhandle the tigers and the brown trout, right? Then we don't like that. Right?
Mic drop. You nailed it.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. All right. So, all right. I see the agenda in play then. Okay. Well, anyway, you're in the right. There's no doubt about that. We got that. We understand that. But still, that's pretty stupid what those minions are up to, I guess.
Well, the minions are minions.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking their cue from their marching leader, if you will, the general.
Ah.
But what the agencies are doing, talk about the waste of money. All that money spent, clean Diamond Lake out, get rid of every living thing within it, restock, restart, bring the browns in. There's considerable cost in raising sterile male brown trout to release in Diamond Lake. The tigers are hybrids. They're naturally sterile, but there's a lot of cost for them to produce them. They are wasting money hand over fist here.
All right.
That also just infuriates me.
Okay, well, at this point,
I can do best.
Okay, all right, yeah. But if the state's not going to step in, you probably got nowhere to go at this point, right?
Right.
Okay.
So we're going to demand accountability. I'm serious. Every single person listening to this, I don't care if you're as angry as I am, but even if you're upset a little, this is when you start beating ODF&W and OSP up, demanding to know why. And this is also when you start getting on every Oregon state representative and state senator you can find and demand to know why.
Okay. Talking with Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. Hey, Greg, let's grab a call or two. All right?
Okay.
Let's see. Of course, I've noticed that some people were calling and they probably weren't using their caller ID. Those are probably the trolls.
More than likely.
Yeah. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this? You're with Greg.
This is Bruce, Rocky Point.
Hey, Bruce, what's going on with you today? You're with Greg.
What are the restrictions on crossbows?
You know, that's also an Oregon thing, because so many states have relented on this and they're now allowing them. I don't understand the why here. Again, this is Oregon doing things that just make me scratch my head and go, why?
Okay.
So anti-crossbow from the beginning. And if I had to guess, a sneaking suspicion may be some of the archery companies that are based here in Oregon may have had something to do with that, but some of those companies now produce crossbows themselves. Crossbows are wildly popular where they're allowed. I truly don't understand this one. I just don't.
Is it? Are you able to hunt more often or more accurately with a crossbow, and you'll have less?
Honestly, I hunt more. No. More accurately, if you're not very proficient with a standard bow, probably, because it's a more stable platform to shoot from. Now, when that means you've got a more stable platform that you're shooting from, it also increases the chance of doing what you should try and be doing ethically, which is an immediate, well-placed kill shot. And it's important for rifles, yes, but it's even far more so when you're launching arrows or a dart. And crossbows definitely would help that.
All right.
So I don't get it.
Greg, I appreciate the take on it this morning. We always like your outdoor report here, keeping us up. Is there anything else we should know as we head into the weekend before we take off?
I'm trying to think. The weather is going to be beautiful through the entire weekend. There is no doubt about that. So if you were thinking you wanted to go do something in the outdoors, do it. Because, you know, tomorrow we're going to be pushing 90 again here in Medford. We cooled down some for Sunday as a cold front moves through, but we're still going to be up around 80. So just mean fabulous weather. This is a, what do I want to do? Well, you could go and do it without having to worry about any kind of weather impact. That's for sure.
All right. Now, our late colleague, Ron Botwell, we talked about him a few weeks ago after he had passed on September 5th. Did the family get a hold of you and invite you to his memorial service tomorrow?
They absolutely did, and I am heartbroken that I am not going to be able to be there, but
okay.
We have a major event happening within our family, and actually his daughter, Brianna, she heard us on the air talking about it. She was well aware of where I was headed and why, and she gave me a pass on that one, but she also heard what I had to say about Ron refusing, even for me, to make a Kiss Destroyer shirt, even though he had the silk screen.
Yep.
So Brianna, out of kindness of her heart, is going to put together some goodies for me out of Ron's personal collection, because she knows I loved her dad.
Yep.
and she knows how much that stuff would absolutely mean to me. So while my thoughts and prayers are absolutely going to be with the family tomorrow, while I'm going to be thinking of Ron constantly, going back over the stories, you know, laughing because the greatest memories with Ron certainly had a lot of laughs associated with them. I have to miss it, even though under any other circumstance, I totally wouldn't. And I'm sure you and Linda will be there. So
yeah, we'll be there tomorrow. We're going to be out there. So I'll let you know how that goes. Okay. So I'm looking forward
awesome.
To it. All right. Let's grab one more call before Greg takes off. You have a question for Mr. Outdoors. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hi, Bill. This is Deb calling from Rogue River.
Yeah, Deb, you have a question for Greg?
Hi. Just a couple things. I just want to tell Greg Roberts, thank you. I appreciate everything you do. And, you know, when they so bad that they lie about the weather, it's nice to have somewhere to check in and get what's truth. And then also,
thank you. I tell people, and I've been honest about this, I'm not going to hit it 100% right every single time because we've got too many variables in play here in this area, but I do my very best, and I do appreciate it when people tell me, hey, you're still far more accurate than any weather guy I've ever seen here. So I deeply appreciate your very kind words.
All right, Deb.
Yes, definitely. I know you're very knowledgeable about wildfire and everything else. And, you know, you're right. You know, Mother Nature had a better idea, you know, a different plan this year. And Kotek's whole idea to burn them out and smoke us out of here, it didn't work.
Okay.
It doesn't mean she has a plan on flooding us out.
Hang on. Not to defend, you know, Kotek and her predecessor, where it comes to the smoke issue, that actually is not anything that the state of Oregon is doing. That comes entirely from the federal agencies and how they elect to proceed on fighting fires. I really don't want to defend a lot of what, you know, has been done in Salem.
Yeah, you don't want to defend Salem, but you're right, though. It is the wildfire plan from 1995 that we're still working under those rules, and the agencies end up using it to their effect. Okay, that's you have to place.
I can tell you for a fact, ODF is as frustrated over that, as upset over that, the smoke situations that we're forced to endure as any of us. So on that issue with the smoke, yes, I'm going to say no. That's not right to attack the state of Oregon because the state of Oregon has nothing to do with that one. That's all federal agencies. That's BLM and Forest Service.
All right, very good. Hey, Greg, have a good weekend. Thanks so much. We'll talk Friday. And Deb, thanks for your call, too. All right? Take care, Greg, over at RogueWeather.com. All right? We'll see you.
You got it, Bill.
734 at 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KBXG in Grants Pass. This is the Bill Myers Show. Of course, the Outdoor Report every Friday, sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is the Rogue Valley's spray-on bedliner leader for...
I'm saving big.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
736. We have some open phone time here in just a moment. I want to talk about the Oregon drivers. Are Oregon drivers as bad as we're being claimed in a story? I'm going to share the story with you here in a couple of minutes. Keith writes me here, by the way, the email bill at BillMyersShow.com. Rules and regulations. Bill, is Greg sounding like a Harris supporter, orange man bad, pathetic? Keith, I don't think you grasped what he was talking about. He said that he was surprised that we have a bunch of MAGA people who are normally out there talking about wanting to have rule of law, following rules and regulations. In other words, you know, peaceful following of rules and regulations. When it came to fishing, all of a sudden want to say, hey, we want to do what we want to do. And I think that's what Greg was grousing about. Not that they were Trump supporters, but that Trump supporters always talk about, I shouldn't say not always, but largely, you know, they talk about not wanting to have necessarily anarchy in every aspect of our life. Okay, so I think that's where he was coming from. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's how I interpreted that, Keith. Okay, all right, 770-5633, bad Oregon driving, and a bunch more. We'll kick it all around coming up.
Did you know that Siskiyou Pump Service does much more than service pumps?
In addition to providing pump installation and repair, Siskiyou Pump installs water systems and storage tanks, water filtration systems, plus conducts real estate well inspections and flow testing. And
independent and serving the Rogue Valley for more than 40 years.
Hi, I'm Steve Potter, body shop manager of Lithia Body and Paint, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
By the way, speaking of Grants Pass Water Lab, I imagine here shortly we will have results of what happened with that Klamath River water that Mark dropped by a number of days ago. Remember the soupy stuff that would settle out with about a quarter inch of sediment in the bottom of the big jar that I had? You'd shake it up, and then it would still just look all soupy, brown, bad, right? All that clay and suspended solids. Be curious to hear or to see what that report says. So I'll let you know as soon as that comes in. Should be an interesting, or could be an interesting talking point or two or more, all right? Let's see. Are Oregon drivers the second worst drivers in the entire country? That's the claim of a story that I've been reading this morning here. According to this Forbes advisor, they did a bunch of researching of drivers in various states. Hawaii is the number one worst driving state, according to Forbes, in the entire country. According to the study, Hawaii motorists admit being the worst drivers, and they rank the lowest nationwide. And they take the top spot for a number of reasons, including changing lanes or turning without signaling. Having driven in Hawaii while on vacation, a lot of that goes on. Speeding 20 miles an hour or more over the limit, And running a red light, 8%, tied with Texas and Oregon. And the state also is number two with driving under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Speeding up to 20 miles per hour over the limit and texting while driving, tied with Missouri and Oklahoma. So it's an interesting story. They did these surveys, and we're looking at what people were busted for. But Oregon is number two in the nation for bad driving. And its drivers rank worst for, this is what we rank bad on, 8% running a red light. Running a red light, that is the worst overall offense. Refusing to yield. Yeah, I see that a lot. I do see that a lot. Refusing to yield or speeding in a school zone. 4% of the tickets there, apparently, for speeding in a school zone. But yeah, we're number two. Number two in the nation? I've lived in a lot of areas around this this country, and even in Ohio, just a few weeks ago, I thought the Ohio driving was much more chaotic and crazy and sort of non-orderly in some ways. And by the way, I'll tell you, in Ohio, and if you're a pedestrian in Ohio and you try to cross the street, you will be run over by the drivers in Ohio. It's like this yielding to pedestrians doesn't seem to happen at all in Ohio. And that was an observation when, a number of times that I was back there, that, the crosswalk is sort of a suggestion. And so I have to say, I wasn't all that impressed with Ohio driving. And, of course, I lived in Ohio for a number of years. Same with Western Pennsylvania. Western Pennsylvania, they seem to be okay drivers, for the most part. It's very mountainous. There's only so much craziness you can do on all that that serious mountain driving. But, Oregon is ranking number two in the nation of being bad drivers. Does that make sense to you? I don't get that. And this is where I'm going on to why I think it's really, this could be a skewed survey here that Forbes has done, Forbes Advisor. Because where we get nailed on is running a red light. They say 8%. 8% of the survey is counting because of lots of red light running. Now, I do see lots of red light running. But I got to tell you, knowing what Dr. Glenn Gamer, our local chiropractor here that was taking the city of Medford to court over the timing of the red light cameras, I'm not convinced that the state of Oregon really does a good job of timing or even the regulations of timing red lights. According to Dr. Gamer and his expert, I forget the name of his expert. I'll have to bring him back on because I know they're still working on getting that class action lawsuit moving forward here
with the red light camera people who were ripped off to the tune of $1.5 million or so here down in South Medford over the last few years. I'm honestly thinking that people say that we run a lot of red lights in Oregon. I wonder how many of these red light tickets are really tickets that if the red lights were being timed properly and there were longer yellow lights, we wouldn't be seeing as much of that. Because in my opinion, and because I would even talk to Gamer about this, and I would say, well, Doc, I'm sitting over there at Fred Meyer in Medford. Fred Meyer, Poplar Drive in that area where there's a Taco Bell, Fred Meyer, and everything else in the Fred Meyer gas station. All that stuff. I'll sit around there over by Lithia Body and Paint, and almost always on Highway 62, there are people just blowing those lights like crazy. They're just, one or two, they're just blasting through. I'll see big semi-trucks that just blast through. And Gumer says back that according to his expert, the engineer, the traffic engineer that he's used on these lawsuits, that they're timing those yellow and red lights too quickly. That at the speed limit that everything's going at that point on Highway 62, that there are times that it's just impossible to stop. There's not enough warning given for a lot of these people, and so they end up blowing the light. And so we're going, man, I'll tell you, these people aren't even trying to stop. Well, yeah, they can't stop within the allotted time, and so they just end up going through it. So maybe there's something like that. So I don't know. Do you think that that Oregon is really the second worst drivers in the entire country? I don't see it. I have problems. Now, I do agree that where Oregon does seem to be pretty bad, it has a really big proclivity, is the refusing to yield. Refusing to yield. There is a lot of that, and that's sort of a passive aggression. I see this all the time, especially if you're out on certain roads in the back roads. The Highway 238, as an example, would be one between Medford, Jacksonville, going out into the Applegate, all up to Grants Pass, Murphy, places like that. And you'll have people who know that there's really no place to pass safely on a lot of that. And then, but there's a passive aggression that I know how fast we're supposed to be going on this road, and I don't want you going any faster, and I'm going to make sure that when there's a straightaway, I speed up so that you can't pass on the few safe areas there are to pass, and so I'm going to show you. I do see a lot of that behavior in Oregon. And that's kind of a passive aggression. That's how I see it. But I don't see the speeding in a school zone or running in a red light. I don't even know why we have school zone speeds. Because if it's dangerous for the kid to be walking around that school off school hours, why is it any more dangerous to be walking by that school at the same speed limit? I've never quite understood that. Kids should be learning how to deal and how to walk safely with traffic the way it normally is. But that's me. You can take me apart if you wish. 770-5633. We can talk about that or anything else on your mind. Are we number two in the nation? Really, for the worst drivers? I do not get that. We've got our problems, but I don't see us as number two. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Bill, this is John Knapp in Grants Pass.
Hey, John, how are you doing this morning? What's on your mind?
I'm good. Hey, one of my jobs is I teach driver's ed.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Okay.
So I teach high school and do the driving on the road. And I would agree that we have some of the worst drivers, especially in the red light running.
Is it really red light running, or is it, once again, like Gamer says, he makes the case that we don't really time the lights to what they really should be, that they're really designed to clip people rather than truly being designed safely?
No, I think people are intentionally running them.
You do.
We teach our kids about stale green lights and the point of no return and stopping.
Well, remember, there is no affirmative yellow light. Technically, we don't have a yellow light law. We have a red light law. So, you're not even supposed to enter the intersection under a yellow, technically, according to state law. And I'm sure you knew that, but, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, Oregon law says you must make every reasonable effort to stop for a yellow light. But what I see constantly, and everybody else as well, is the light turns yellow and you can hear the motors rev up.
Oh, yeah.
People accelerate to get through a yellow light instead of making the reasonable effort to stop.
Okay, now those are genuine genuinely people who are trying to run it. I agree with you when you hear that. And yeah, when you hear the race, especially when you see the Dodge Ram truck or the Ford F-250 rolling coal, right? The turbochargers on full spool up as they blast through the intersection, right? You know it. There's no hiding that, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You did mention two school zones. Being that I teach at the local, my class is held at the local high school.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you that it really isn't the driver's fault. The speed is reduced 5 miles an hour. It's 20 miles an hour. But
yeah,
really, I see kids running across the street because we teach right at the time school gets out. I see kids running across the street everywhere except the marked crosswalks. I see parents stopping in the red fire zones to pick them up.
Really?
In not designated pickup spots.
Wow.
Which causes the kids to run across the street in a non-designated crossing spot. So I think the parents bear a great responsibility for the traffic in the school zones and the kids crossing illegally. We should be teaching them, I'll pick you up in a parking lot, not I'll pick you up in a fire zone.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. Now, since you teach driver's ed, though, is there a... Let me ask you. I'm going to go back on to the Eric Peters conversations that I have. You know him, the automotive journalist I talk to every Wednesday, right?
Right.
He believes that today's modern vehicles are doing so much of the work, and there's so much of this, lane assist and auto this and auto that, and it's going to bing at you if you end up, not paying attention or this and that and the other. He believes it actually makes us worse drivers. What do you feel about that opinion, given you are a driver's ed instructor? I'm curious.
I would have to disagree with him only because I have one of those cars.
You do?
So I have a car that when I set my cruise control in town, it paces me 3 seconds behind the car in front of me.
Uh-huh.
When the car slows down to stop for a red light, it automatically stops to slow down for the red light, spacing the proper distance behind the car. And when the light turns green, it accelerates at the same speed as the car in front of me. So, I mean, my car and I, I can take my hands off the wheel and I can read a book in my car if I was that stupid.
But you see, that's what I'm getting at, though. When kids are learning on cars like that, they don't learn how to do that. When I take that 82 Volkswagen of mine out there, I have to drive it. I have to have a safe following distance. I have to keep the space in there. In other words, I have to have those skills. If we're giving everybody these cars, if these kids are learning on cars that have this kind of technology, they won't have those skills.
And I think you probably hit the nail on the head with that one. If they have driver's education classes, they learn how to do it right. But if they have parents, because I have these kids who their parents have taught them to drive, and I have to reteach them the bad habits and skills that parents teach them, because that's how parents have always done it.
Yeah. What are the, what are the worst habits that most, that many parents end up bringing to their kids and you have to beat them out of the kids and teach them the right way? What do they do? Just curious.
Following too close.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a following too close issue. We try to get you 4 seconds behind, and 4 seconds is a long ways. You're counting 1,001, 2, 3, 4. It's a long ways, and nobody wants to be that far back because, as you said, somebody's going to cut them off.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to teach drivers, these young kids, just be courteous. Somebody turns on their signal, take your foot off the gas pedal. It's that simple.
Oh, you mean that when the person behind you is trying to pass, you're not supposed to speed up? Really?
Yeah, that's exactly what that means. Yeah.
I see a lot of that. That's it. Especially, and I mentioned this, when I'm out on the Applegate, I don't know what it is about Highway 238 that seems to attract the passive aggression drivers that say, I have decided that I know how fast you're supposed to be going on Highway 238 and you are not going to get around me. Have you ever noticed that on the 238 world?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. And we have student driver marked all over our car. And so when we signal, you would think that the
sane person would think, okay, let me cut this person a break. They're trying to learn how to drive. Uh-huh. Let me get off the gas. But I think in their minds they say, I don't want to be behind a student driver, so I'm going to speed up and get in front of them and make them try to get behind me.
Okay.
It's funny. I wanted to point out one other quick thing.
Okay, sure.
One of the other reasons I think we have so many traffic violators is when Oregon State changed it to all the fines are on an Oregon traffic citation and all the money basically goes to Oregon State, there's no incentive for local law enforcement to write a citation because they're costing their officers and their deputies money that the agency can't recover.
That's very interesting. So don't the local jurisdictions get some cut of that, though?
They do, but once the state takes their section and the court takes their section and everything, I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but it's like 10% of the traffic fine gets down to the agency.
Oh.
And if the offender pleads not guilty and goes to court, then the agency has to pay that officer overtime to go in on their day off. Mm-hmm. So it costs the agency money to write tickets.
Got it.
It's cheaper not to write them.
So that's why the cops don't seem to pay so much attention to these issues. Okay. All right. That's interesting. That's interesting, Jonathan. Now, would you say, though, that Oregon is number two bad driver in the country, though?
My personal opinion on observations is Washington State drivers are far worse.
And you know who is worse than Washington State? British Columbia. Yeah.
British Columbia. Yeah.
I don't know what.
I just see a lot of Washington drivers here in Oregon, and I think they drive worse than Oregon drivers.
All right. I will agree with you, but BC drivers, those are the ones that I steer clear of. They're, you know, the BC driver in the Subaru, British Columbia driver in a Subaru, I give them, you know, a lot of room. They just say, okay, just get around me, okay? It's all right.
Probably smart.
All right. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for the call. Good one. I appreciate that, all right? Number two, worst driver in the country, are we really? This is the Bill Myers Show.
I'm Bill Payne, sending a shout-out to Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc.
Kronos Klingon planet has catastrophic anthropogenic global warming. Shall we proceed in beaming them off the planet?
Ground Zero.
Fascinating.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
On KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Folks are emailing me about Oregon being the number two ranked bad drivers in the country. I see some stupidity. I see a lot of that, but and believe me, I'm willing to call us out when I think we are doing some bad things, and we do have some proclivities out here in Oregon. But I've lived in so many other areas of the country in which it's brutally aggressive in many areas of the country. Okay, even in Southern California too, for that matter. Jeff writes me this morning, hey, Bill, I've always been a proponent of all drivers having to learn and pass their driver's test on a car or truck with manual steering, manual brakes, and three speeds on the column. Hey, I like that. So you have to know how to deal with a manual shift. You have to learn how to be able to squeeze the brakes and not do the, in case you don't have anti-lock brakes, right? And manual steering, too. I get that. Betty writes it this morning, Bill, the bad drivers are in Oregon because they're fleeing from California. They can't read the English signs. All right, Betty, I got to give you a real American salute because you make me laugh on that. Kathy also weighs in, Bill, trust me, New Jersey, some of the worst driving after having lived there for 12 years. Both my husband and I saved ourselves from getting beaten up. Yes, getting beaten up many times. Definitely some of the rudest, most aggressive. I've heard things like that too, Kathy. Jeff also weighing in. Apparently, these people have never been to Detroit. So Detroit has pretty aggressive driving. Is that what you're saying, Jeff? All right. Appreciate the email, bill@billmyersshow.com. And by the way, emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson in Central Point Family Dentistry. And if you have been getting your teeth knocked out from a rude, aggressive driver from New Jersey like Kathy may have been trying to run away from, well, just take it and get the tooth replaced and get that, you know, while you wait crown. But it's centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Good people. And by the way, it is a right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant, Freeman Way, okay? Get your appointment. Now then, 4 minutes after 8. And we have an interesting guest coming up here in a bit. It's actually a person who spent most of his life just trying to figure out who his real father was. And it was an interesting experiment. Actually, a PBS TV reporter. We'll have that coming up.